This is System Trader Show, episode number 2.
Welcome to System Trader Podcast. Listen to interviews with top traders and find out how the most successful traders beat the markets and what are the secrets of their success. This is System Trader Podcast with your host, Jack Lempart.
Today I have a great pleasure to interview Thomas Streetsman. He is very well known in the industry of system trading, having over 20 years of experience. He was writing for Futures magazine in the 90s. He's an author of 2 books, Trading Systems That Work, and the second one, Trading Systems and Money Management. At the moment, Thomas is running his fund at AlphaCraft in Sweden, where he's using strategies based on short-term trend-following approach. In this episode, we talk about his approach to trading, the importance of position sizing, how to build a robust strategy, and artificial intelligence. I hope you will enjoy the show. Hi, Thomas, and welcome to my podcast.
Hi, Jacek. Nice to be here.
Thank you very much for accepting my invitation to the show. Could you please give us some background, especially regarding your system design research and trading career?
Oh, wow, my trading career. Let's see. I actually started out as a journalist or a reporter and analyst for a financial daily here in Sweden back in the 90s. I was writing analysis articles over short-term markets, what happened in the market in the short term. And for that, I used technical analysis as a tool for my writing and research. And doing that, I also became interested in systematic strategies. At first, I came in contact with a systematic trader, a Norwegian guy that showed me his strategies. And seeing his results, I started to try it on my own using mostly Excel back in the day and things like Equus MetaStock software. This was back in the 90s, so a long time ago. And being a programmer and computer type of guy, I really liked it. It was for me. So eventually I managed to land a job as a systems trading expert and writer for Futures magazine in Chicago. Don't ask me why they went for a Swedish guy for this position, but I got the job and I worked as a systems design expert for them. And it was my job then to write articles on my own, but also to find American experts to write articles for me. So naturally, I learned a lot from a lot of experts in the field, and I became friends with many of these people. Eventually, I landed a job as a senior researcher for Rotella Capital, which was one of the biggest CTAs back in the day. This was like early 2000, around there. But eventually I decided to move back to Sweden, and since about 2008-2009 I'm running my own CTA hedge fund together with a couple of colleagues here in Sweden, and as such I trade commodity futures. So that's what I'm still doing today.
Thank you, Thomas, for that introduction. So let's talk a bit more about your approach to trading within your fund, and we'll also talk about some other topics around it. My first question is, how many strategies and how many markets you are trading within your fund?
Okay, markets, easy then. It's about 30 different markets. Strategies, that's when the answer becomes a bit more complicated. I trade only one type of strategy, but I trade with several systems. But all the systems are specifically targeting the very same strategy. They're just using different entry-exit points on the chart, so to speak. And my strategy is short-term trend following, which means that I'm trend following in the sense that I'm doing breakouts and I'm following longer term trends, but I'm trying to stay as short term within that realm as possible.
Okay, and you're trading mostly on the futures market?
Only futures markets. I trade about 30 different futures markets in commodities, interest rates, currencies, and equities. And within the commodity field, you have like agricultural markets, you have energy markets, you have metal markets.
Okay, and when you say a short-term strategy, trend following strategy, what does it mean to you on average for how long the positions are opened?
Okay, for trend following strategy, I try to be as short-term as I possibly can. And you really can't go any shorter term than what I do if you want to remain trend follower. And that means that my losing trades last for around 5 to 6 days. My winning trades lasts for around or a little bit over 20 days. And then because I have like one winner for every two losers, a hit ratio of about 33%, that means that the average trade length for me, for all trades included, comes out to about 10 to 11 days. And that's basically as short term as you can go while you remain a trend follower.
Okay, thank you, Thomas, very much for that. It's very interesting what you say, because typically when we think about the trend following strategies, we usually think about weeks or months. And here you say that in your case, when you are having a position which is losing, you are closing it typically after 5-6 days. And it's only in the case when it's a winning trade, it takes like up to 20 days. But normally still, I mean, when someone thinks about the trend following strategy, it's quite, let's say, unusual in the way we think, how we see the trend following strategies.
Yes, that's true. Normally a trend following strategy, and also the way I once started in this business was normal trend following strategy with the losing trades maybe lasting 1 or maybe even 2 months and winning trades lasting like 6 months to a year. But we also tend to fool ourselves a little bit in thinking that the trend following strategy is longer term than it actually is. It is shorter term than you think, because most of your trades will be losers, and the losers you want to get out of as soon as possible anyway. So normally we think of trend following, we see those 1, 2, 3 fantastic winning trades that last forever as typical for what the trend following strategy is, but that's not so. But anyway, for me, I try to stay at the very shorter end. For one thing, it's not exploited by others. I seem to be alone, and that leaves room for me to be uncorrelated to the business.
Right. Interesting. So it's a kind of a niche to you, in which you're specializing. Thank you, Thomas, for that. It's very, very interesting. Another question I would like to ask you is regarding the strategies. Are they using only purely, let's say, technical analysis signals, or do you have maybe some elements of fundamental analysis involved as well? I know that this border between the fundamental analysis and technical analysis may be not so obvious. So by saying the technical analysis, I mean here that you follow only the prices. So you don't use, let's say, any news or any reports. It just doesn't mean anything to you.
Yeah. So the way you defined your question, in terms of the entry exit systems, the code that I use to find my entry exit in the markets. Yes, I'm. Strictly technical analysis, and I view price data or let's call it chart data. Then you have price data, you have open interest, you have volume, and sometimes I use volume, but 95% is pure price data for that specific market only. So yes, very simple technical analysis. The longer I keep doing this, the simpler, the easier my entry exit systems, let's use the right term there, systems, becomes in terms of code or complicated algorithms. It's very simple. It's moving averages, it's crossovers, it's Bollinger Bands, and it's highest high, lowest low type breakouts. That's what it is.
Is your trading fully automated, or the systems you have are only, let's say, generating signals which are then manually executed on the market?
I don't know if you could what you should call this. Yes, they are fully automated with like one manual interim step. The way I do it is that I use one piece of software every morning to write out a report that generates all the levels and the number of contracts to buy and sell for all markets and systems. Okay. And this report, I could easily connect the API between one piece of software to the other piece of software and just have this report sent automatically from one piece of software to the other. But I do print it out and look at it and then type it in the second piece of software by hand every morning. And this second piece of software then, that's my interface to my broker. Okay, so I have the report in front of me and I type in the numbers exactly as they are given to me and send them to my broker in London. So now the orders are resting on their server in London. There are no other decisions like made on my part. Like I can, if I get a signal, I will wait for the entry and take it later, or I will trade a few contracts now and more contracts later and things like that. There's no such decisions on my part. So from that point of view, I'm 100% automatic, but I do have this simple little step in between. I don't even need to have it this step to check things are running correctly. It's more likely that I will be the one doing a mistake in my typing. I'm just having it there so it gives me some kind of feel for actually being a trader. Otherwise, I could stay in bed all morning and go play golf in the afternoon and I wouldn't know heck about trading. So this is just for the fun of trading, I have this step.
Okay, I understand. Thank you. Thank you, Thomas. So it also maybe helps you to come up with some new ideas. I mean, trading ideas, because you are, as you said, you're not fully cut off from the market. You do some part, let's say, by hand. So you can, as you said, feel the markets and then you are closer to the markets rather than just blindly follow the... I mean, you are following the system, but it's not like the computer is doing everything automatically for you, but you are just having some, let's say, control over it.
No, that's true. That's a very good point. You know, once I have developed the system, it's hands off from that system for many, many years. Come good time or bad time, I keep my hands off it and let it do what it does. But the system is developed by me because of some idea I once had, you know, and things go for systems I will build in the future. They come from some kind of idea. And usually I can get those ideas when I'm sitting with this piece of paper in the morning and I can go like, oh, that was interesting. Wonder why that happened. What kind of anomaly is that? What kind of discrepancy is that? Let's see if I can code something up quickly to see if I can capture some new money making potential or something like that. So yeah, that's true. That's how I get my ideas.
Right, I understand. And could you tell us a bit what software and what tools you're using for, in the first place, development of your strategy, and then the tools and the software you're using for execution of this strategy?
Okay, can I start with the second part? That's quicker. For execution, I use IB. What's the their full name? Interactive Brokers. Is that the name in London? And I use their software mostly because it's very easy to understand, and they have very dynamic ways of applying stops and stop losses, so especially to positions that are not yet active. So you can manage stops on positions that are still waiting to be taken. That's important to me. So anyway, that was the second part. The first part is that I mostly use a piece of software called Traders Studio, and I'm doing this because I'm basically old school. You know, I'm starting out this thing back in 1995, something like that. You know, at first, and then you had like software like Equis, MetaStock. You had early versions of TradeStation and those type of software. So you invest a lot of time and energy and research hours in getting to understand a piece of software. So you kind of build yourself stuck a little bit. So right now I'm stuck in what's called Trader Studio. Trader Studio is a piece of software that's based on TradeStation ideas and TradeStation ways of coding the strategies. But it's much more sophisticated. It has much better money management capabilities than TradeStation ever had. I don't know how TradeStation is today, but when I used it, everything I now can use in Trader Studio in terms of money management, position sizing algorithms, and so on, I previously had to do in Excel. So for example, my books are written using TradeStation and Excel, and all that stuff I can now do in Trader Studio.
So are you using also the Easy language or some other programming language?
Sort of. Traders Studio is basically a take on Easy language. I think you can import and export Easy language to and from Traders Studio. Now that said, I would like to point out that I am sort of doing research in other platforms as well, such as mostly R. Actually, I don't know if you heard of the programming language R. Yeah, so I'm doing a lot of research there, and especially when it comes to more modern stuff such as machine learning and well, maybe artificial intelligence. I haven't really started that yet, but at least machine learning techniques such as trees, things like that. R is the way to go for me in the future.
Okay, thank you, Thomas, for that. Before we'll go more about the position sizing, which you mentioned a bit before, I want to ask you one more question regarding your fund, because on your website I found that the fund's average annual return target is around 15%, which seems to be a lot in the era of very low interest rates. However, I also noticed that three recent years were quite difficult, although the beginning of the fund, which was like, I don't remember, 8-9 years ago, was very good. And now again, the system is working very well and you have a very good results. Is there any explanation why there was a poorer, period for this type of strategies you're using and now it's again on track?
Yeah, very, very good complex question. And a very tough question also, I would like to say. As a CTA type trend follower, we should all have to ask those questions a bit more frequently, actually, because currently none of us are living up to the results that we are, or at least that we once were aiming for. And those are the, like 15 to 20% on average per year. I mean, where to start? Well, let's put it this way. Like 15 years ago, 10, 15, 20 years ago, trend followers back then, they could easily take 15 to 20% per year on average from the markets, okay? But one reason they could do so was that you had interest levels around 6 to 8%, maybe even higher. This is for two reasons. One is a large portion of what a CTA make is actually risk-free interest, because we have margin money. We have most of the money liquid and we're making money on the risk-free rate. Second thing is that when the rates are high, the markets simply produce the type of volatility that allows a trend following CTA to make a larger return. Sort of a little similar thing with the equity markets. When the interest rates were higher, you can get a higher return out of the equities. The markets simply demand that. They want interest plus some risk premium, you know. But with interest very close to zero, the volatility behavior of all markets, equity markets, commodity markets, and so on, are such that you simply can't get those 15 to 20% per year on average. Okay, so that said, let me then say that, sure, you can get 15 to 20% from just 1 year here and there, but you will not get it on average. And I think most CTAs, they have not accepted that fact quite yet. For one thing, it takes us all many years to react to the fact, because we are building our strategies on historical data. So we need to build up the history over a couple of years before we can actually come to a conclusion that, hey, 15% is no longer there. I need to lower my return target. And personally, I have done so twice over the last few years. And for now, my return target is actually like on average, let's say around 10% a year. That's where I'm targeting. And as long as I'm doing lower than that, you can still have a losing year. The strategy can still not sort of produce you a good year. That's fine. That's still within what can be expected. That's just within the statistics of your strategy. But long term, I am currently looking for maybe 8 to 10% a year, and that's how much you can ask these days. Did I answer your question there in any way, or do we need to maybe talk a bit more about it? This is a good topic.
I think that still, even with saying 10%, 8-10%, what you achieved in your fund, AlphaCraft, it's still, you are very good in terms of what the competition is doing, competitors are doing. So basically, it's, as you said, probably that maybe some other players, they don't understand that the conditions changed and that the expectation also needs to be, let's say, aligned to that new conditions. And maybe that puts you aside from what the other competitors are doing, because I see that indeed AlphaCraft is outperforming, at least in Sweden, your main competitors, right?
Yes.
So that's a very, very, very good, result.
Well, let me give you an example there. What happens if you have a too high return target is that you are trading too large positions. You are simply risking too much, and you are producing way too much volatility, unnecessary volatility, for the return that is possible. Okay, so for example, what happened this February is a typical example. You know, like this February, just 1 month ago, the industry as a whole had its worst month for, I think, the last 17 years or something like that. You know, most indices, trend following indices, were dropping like in the neighborhood of 7 to 10%. Individual trend following CTAs were dropping like 10 to 13, 15% in 1 month's performance. You know, these are numbers that are for 1 month worse than what many largest drawdowns used to be back in the older days. And this is because they have not realized that you cannot look for 20% anymore. You need to lower your risk and start looking much lower. I was basically, as far as I know, the only CTA, I can't remember now. I think we made money. I think I was up 2% or something like that. That's because my algorithms, before moving into February, they were giving me these entry exit signals. You should enter and exit here. And then I looked at the position sizing algorithms, and the position sizing algorithms, they were saying 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, meaning no positions. My algorithms did not allow me to trade.
Right. I see that you are paying a significant focus on position sizing. And actually, it seems like you spent much less time on designing the entries and exits. So could you please explain that a little bit more?
Yeah, I think I discovered when I wrote my first book back in 99, 2000, Trading Systems That Work. I think I discovered then position sizing is way more important for your bottom line than where to enter and exit exactly. In fact, you can, and I possibly could put together a strategy with random entry and exits and make that profitable with a good position sizing. So it's much more important to focus on position sizing. And just as we talked about trend following, short-term trend following strategy, focusing on position sizing gives me a niche, you know. This is an area underdeveloped by most CTAs. At least I have reason to believe that if I judge their performance.
Right. I know that you are using in your position sizing the optimal F. And it's a very well-known thing in the world of bet sizing. And it was very well described by Ralph Vince. Could you please explain us very shortly what optimal F is and how you exactly are applying it in your trading? Because very often we know that optimal F, I mean, trading the optimal F, it's just a nightmare because it gives you a very huge drawdown. So how do you exactly apply optimal F in your trading?
Well, in regards to your question, optimal F is very difficult and dangerous to trade because it doesn't take any other considerations than trying to maximize your end return, your final equity. So the optimal F formula doesn't care if you have a 90% drawdown 1 week, as long as you're up 110% the next day, or how many 100% you need to be break even again, or something like that. It doesn't consider that. That's why no trader can trade its true optimal F. And for sure, no investor can invest with the trader that trades optimal F, because the actual investor the people that put money on your fund, they can take even less volatility than the trader can. So from that point of view, optimal F is like you can't use it. But one thing is that you need to know about it. You need to know where you have your optimal F, and you need to picture the curve, the relationship between your position sizing and your equity and the volatility that position sizing produces, and you know where on this curve you are placing yourself. Where on the curve, what type of return volatility relationship will you have given different type of position sizes or fractions? Optimal F stands for fraction of equity to risk, and optimal as optimal in optimal F terms is just optimizing equity. Now, knowing that is good. But you should not just limit yourself to accepting optimal F according to theory of Ralph Vince, which is good and correct and super important, but nothing forces you or keeps you from developing your own optimal F. Put it optimal according to any constraints that you would like to see. Maximum drawdown allowed, maximum exposure in terms of margin or leverage, maximum volatility and so on. And optimal, find your optimal fraction of equity to risk according to those constraints. That's basically what I have done.
Okay, thank you very much for that. So just to summarize it, you are, let's say, still using the spirit of the optimal F, but with some constraints, and of course using a fraction of what optimal F says to you. So basically, it's not like if someone would think that you are just trading the full optimal F, because that would bring you a huge drawdown on the equity line. But you just implement your own constraints and you just use the fraction of the optimal F.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, thank you very much, Thomas, for that. You are systematic and quantitative type of trader. Have you chosen such path for trading because it's very linked to your personality, or maybe there were some other reasons why you didn't want to go in the way which discretionary trading are going?
Well, it's definitely a personality issue in that I sort of like to solve problems. To me, it's not actually about trading and make money and become rich from the markets. You know, to me, the markets provide you a sort of a problem that you would like to solve before you die, kind of thing. Like they provide you a problem, like a really, really hard crossword puzzle for those who are into that, you know, same type of thing. I gotta solve this before I can go to bed, kind of thing. So from that point of view, it really fits my personality and my way of thinking analytically and systematically, and to then apply code, write beautiful R code to discover something. I mean, that's a joy. So from that point of view, yeah, sure, it's a personality thing. Now, that said, I have a funny little episode when I got started. When I first started to actually trade systematically with my own money back in the 90s, I talked to a few friends of mine from the university that with similar minds like mine into building a strategy. I think we were using Excel and Equus MetaStock, And we built a systematic strategy that we then started to trade with the money we put together, the three of us. And in the beginning, we were actually doing great from, I don't know, from pure luck or if the system was that good or something like that. We were trading OMX futures and options here in Stockholm. And we made a lot of money. But then we came together and we said, like, hey, this is kind of boring, you know. We're just sitting here watching the system do its thing. But we're traders. We can make more money if we start to trade discretionary. So if it had taken us like sort of a year to make all this money, we lost it all and then some in a couple of weeks trading discretionary. So that's when I decided never ever discretionary for me. And I have not placed one discretionary trade since then.
Okay, I understand. But I think that if we have some discretionary traders which are successful, in fact, even they are using a kind of a systematic approach. Recently, I interviewed Linda Rashke, and she described herself as discretionary. But in fact, when she described her approach to the markets, she's still modeling the markets, so she knows where the probabilities are. And she just takes the decision by herself, but in the background, she has done her homework and is performing in a very, let's say, systematic approach.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that here maybe the misunderstanding is that sometimes the discretionary means that it's a total chaos, whereas maybe even someone using some discretionary approach will still be using some disciplined procedure.
Very much so. A very correct observation, Jacek. During my Chicago years, I also came to know a lot of good systematic a good discretionary traders. And actually, Linda, I think she's in Florida, Boca Raton or something like that, being one of them. I used to be very close friend with Linda back in the day. We don't meet each other. I haven't seen her in many, many years. But if she listens to this, I'd be happy to come and visit in Florida. Anyway.
Yeah. Now she's in Chicago, by the way.
She
mostly.
She is. Oh, okay. Cool. I need to look her up. In fact, I do have a book of hers. I need to return somehow, but more about that later. Anyway, yes, you're right, Jacek. Every successful discretionary trader I have met, and especially the commodity traders in Chicago then, the more successful they are, the more systematic they also have been in their own heads, without even sort of realizing or knowing it themselves. You know, they have had a very strict, cool, calculated approach to the markets. And the most easy thing is that they know how to take a stop. You know, they know how to take a stop and a loss. That's what they do without second thinking. Another thing is that the technical analysis field, it's like full of like gazillion different type of indicators and oscillators and various tools you can do for using in your decision making. But most discretionary traders, they use a very limited set of tools and equations and so on that they are very familiar with and that they can easily apply in their own heads in a totally systematic manner. So yeah, the best discretionary traders are in fact also very systematic traders, except it takes place in their own heads instead of having to code it into a computer.
And now, short break for our sponsor of the show, CandleScanner. CandleScanner is a technical analysis software package created for investors interested in candle patterns. What makes candle scanner application exceptional is that, from the outset, it has been specifically designed for the detection of candle patterns. It is not just an add-on to an existing analysis platform, but a specialist charting application written by people with an extensive knowledge of the topic of candlestick patterns. It is suitable for both seasoned traders and complete beginners. With Candle Scanner, you can do the following. Quickly scan candlestick charts to find all occurrences of candle patterns. Measure the efficiency of patterns, that is, are they working as you expect them to? Build trading strategies based on candle patterns and simulate transactions. And soon, define any custom pattern you want, then scan the charts and measure its efficiency. And all this without any coding. Please visit candlescanner.com for more details. What do you think is the, if there is a right approach to make sure that what we designed, I mean, the trading ideas we come up with, that they are not suffering the curve fitting or data mining bias? I know that it's very difficult to say that, but I mean, do you have any tips how to build a model so that it has a better chance to work on the market? Is there anything like that?
No, another very good question. And no, I don't have any such tip, actually. Look at it this way. Like, I mean, from a strictly scientific academic point of view, once you have used one time series for like one, just one run of finding entry exit strategies or finding parameters for entry exit, you have used that time series. Scientifically, academically speaking, whatever, you should not be allowed to use that time series ever again, you know? But here we are, and we are applying, we are doing like millions and tens of millions of runs over a very limited set of maybe 50 different time series in the commodity markets, and we do it over and over and over again. So just there you have a huge curve fitting bias dilemma. How do you deal with that? I know of no way than just using the same time series again and again, and we all do it. Am I somehow answering your question here? Shall we?
Yes, definitely yes. But if we go a little bit further, so when you are preparing your models and you have a set of data, are you using the whole set at once, or you are just leaving, you put aside some part of it, just let's say for out of sample testing, just to verify still on the computer if the system or the model you have created is working on the data which was unseen.
For the most part, when I use normal technical analysis, I basically use all available data. For one thing, I mean, I've been running so many systems. So whether I like it or not, I'm so biased, and I'm so aware aware ahead of time where the results will sort of happen, where they will come. You know, I know beforehand, before I run a system, whether it will be a good, a profitable system or a negative system. I don't need the confirmation from out of sample data when it comes to the technical analysis type systems. And also, as I mentioned, as far as polluting the data or using contaminated data or data that is is now full of my own bias. I mean, that damage in terms of me happened back in 96, 97 already when I started. And that goes for all of us. What can you do? You only have this much data to deal with. And that's just fact of life. In fact, a friend of mine used to say that he who can curfew the hardest and get away with it, he wins the game. And that's basically true.
Oh, that's very interesting what you say. But also it's, I think, a very important aspect here, which you mentioned before, that the, for example, entries and exits you are designing are, in fact, very simple. So in fact, you're not making complex setups. You're just based on a very simple things, and that's maybe also helping you to make it robust.
Yes, exactly. Again, to what my friends say, he who can curve it the hardest and gets away with it, that get away with it part is important. You know, you need to stop the curve fitting at a certain level where you feel confident that you can get away with it. So that's basically what you're doing.
Yeah. Thank you, Thomas. Yeah. Do you wanted to add something? Sorry, I interrupted you.
No. If you ask me the same question again, I would probably answer sort of the same but differently. So we could talk about this for the rest of the day.
Okay. So I've got another question to you. What is your view on using some aspects of artificial intelligence within trading?
Just the way you ask the question, like simple, like that. I'm all for it, and I think it's the way to go. And I'm starting to look into it a little bit myself. Or to be more correct, maybe not artificial intelligence as the term is being used today, involving neural nets and deep learning type things and recognize a dog from a cat, those kind of issues. But more in terms of machine learning and classification algorithms like logistic regressions, random forest type trees, ADA boost, Q boost, and what have you. There, I think we have a lot to do.
Okay, so you definitely see a future here for such approach.
Absolutely, I do.
And what do you think then about software which is now available to everyone, which basically discovers and even is coding trading strategies automatically using, for example, genetic programming or machine learning approach as well? So basically, what you had to do normally before with your eye and just try and test and try and code, and it was very maybe boring or very time consuming. Now you can automate that procedure. Do you think that such kind of software may be helpful, or it's just a trap?
Oh wow. Okay. Now the question becomes a little different, I think. Now I think we might be into what you call trap territory here. Basically, the way it sounds to me is what you're describing is something that is sort of like a technical analysis software, like Traders Studio or Traders TradeStation, filled with some artificial intelligence algorithm generators. What shall we call them? Can we call them that? Artificial intelligence algorithm generators. That feels sort of the same purpose as the many thousands of technical indicators you can find in any technical analysis platform like Trader Studio or TradeStation. Then they are only there to deceive you and fool you, and you get too many options, and you will curve it too hard, and you will jump from one strategy to the next, the one that looked best during your last hypothetical trade while you actually lost your last real trade, and then you're shifting to another strategy that will only make you lose again. So no, from the way I understood your question, no, I don't see a good future for artificial intelligence in trading used that specific way.
Do you think that trading nowadays is harder than it used to be in the era markets which are dominated by the computers? Do you think that it's harder now to make money on the markets?
Yeah, well, it's harder, first of all, with the interest levels being as they are, it's harder for even successful, disciplined, discretionary trader to make money today back then, because the volatility levels, volatility behavior of the market is such that it's harder to find the profit generating moves. Second, as we talked about earlier, I think if you are living somehow like sort of in the past, in that you think you can trade just as aggressively as you did 10, 15 years ago, then even the strategies that would be profitable will be losing strategies for you today if you trade them that aggressively. So yeah, maybe it is harder to make money in the markets today than it was 10, 15 years ago. But then again, someone is making money. That's just the way the markets work. And you ask some other trader, they will say that, no, it's easier or it's the same. You just have to adopt and so on. So good luck to them if they are able to adopt without like any notice or in this really quick manner to begin with. For most people, I say it's tougher.
Okay, I understand. Thank you very much. Thomas, you have written two great books. Actually, especially the first one was a great influence to me more than 10 years ago. Trading Systems That Work, that's the first one. It was written in 2000. And another one, Trading Systems and Money Management, from 2003. Both these books are already pretty old, but do you see anything now different to what you have described there at that time?
Well, yes, I see many things. Well, first of all, let me ask you, do you mean different in terms of other books or other?
No, different. Different in the way how you see the things described there. I mean, do you think that the approach you described in these books somehow changed now? You've got some other experience and you see this somehow differently?
Not really differently, but I see more of it. I have looked deeper into the subject. So maybe the subject have changed for me through that reason. I still think that my first book, Trading Systems That Work, is a very good book and very valid and still a very good read for at least for the person that likes to start out or take their new interest into the next level. That said, I personally have developed, if not away from it, so deeper into the subject, and a lot of the stuff that are still based on what's in the books have changed quite a big deal. I put even more focus into money management and position sizing today than I did then. My algorithms for money management and position sizing, while considering things like optimal F, look way different today than they did back then, and so on. But the main concept, the main takeaway from the book, the importance between the connecting money management with your entry exit system, is still very valid. That's still something I emphasize a lot.
Okay, great. Thank you, Thomas, for that. We are getting slowly to the end of this interview. I've got the last question, which will be a bit, I think, funny to you. The cryptocurrency is a hot topic now. And I know that you are trading mostly on futures, but now there are even two future contracts on Bitcoin. Are you thinking, or maybe you are trading about these futures?
No. It is kind of funny, but it's, I don't know, it's also sad in the way. Let me ask you, like, what the hell is Bitcoin? What is it for? Does it store value? Is it for facilitating transaction? Is it for buying and selling stuff? Is it like an exchange mechanism between other currencies, or is it for the central banks to store the country reserve in it? What the hell is it for? I see no like true purpose for Bitcoin in real life, you know, outside your computer, and I see no use for it. It's a mystery to me. And sure, whether it's a mystery or not, I could still trade it, you know, if it could make me money somehow. But then again, as I said before, to me, the being a trader and building systems and strategies is primarily not about making money. It's about solving some kind of problem, dilemma. And in so doing, I would like to take myself, I don't know, sort of serious somehow, you know, somehow think that what I'm doing serves a greater good, or I'm playing a part in society, or I'm doing something that I can explain to my parents in financial terms. You know, something that makes sense, and look myself in the mirror in the morning instead of like trying to make money from, I don't know, from toys. I don't know. To me, I could just, if trading, sure, people are making billions of dollars on their Bitcoin. Good for them. But for me, Bitcoin is just as valuable as buying and selling Beanie Babies as you did in the 90s. You know, it doesn't make any sense. Did I answer?
yeah, you answered. Yeah. I understand. So thank you very much for that. Okay, it seems that we've covered all questions prepared for you today, Thomas. Do you maybe have anything you'd like to mention before we finish today's podcast?
Oh, wow. What could that be? Not really. I think you had some very good questions that we all CTAs should be forced to answer from time to time, or to look deeper into. And I'm sure that while the CTA industry has been in somewhat of a crisis performance wise, a large portion of that you cannot. Do anything about. It's just what life gives you. I'm quite sure that many CTAs would have done better had they had the reason to be more critical over their systems and strategies, just like your questions sort of forced me to be right now with myself. So good questions. You should ask them to every CTA on the planet.
Okay, thank you very much, Thomas, for that. If someone would like to learn more about you or to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
I mean, they can always find me on LinkedIn. They can use my opticizer@gmail.com email address. But when doing so, I need to ask everybody a favor. Don't ask me anything about what happened on any specific page in my book and so on. I mean, sure, I wrote the book, but it was many years ago. I read it myself, and I too have developed my research. I have learned from my own writing, and I have moved on to other concepts. So feel free to ask me questions. Just don't ask me to go look at page 285 in my book to answer, because it doesn't make any sense to me anymore.
Okay, I understand. Thank you very much, Thomas, for your time. I think we have a lot of value here for everyone, so I do appreciate, and all the best.
Thank you very much, Jacek. It was a pleasure. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you for listening. I hope you liked the show. For more details regarding this episode, please visit my website at systemtrader.show/002. Now that's all from my side. I wish you all the best, happy trading, and goodbye.